So Rabbosai, in this week's parasha, we have in Tetzaveh the mitzvah of Shemen Lama'or, of the Shemen Kosis in the menorah. And this leads us to our topic for today, which is covered extensively with a tremendous anthology of sources in this presentation, this article in olamot.net called Chashmal B'Toras Ner. Now, as I began going through the material, I realized that there's so much here, even though these issues were only addressed in the last century, when chashmal, when electricity started becoming so commonly used. If you go back to the year 1900, I don't know if you'll find any tshuvas, and certainly not in the Gemara or in the Rishonim, do you find anything about chashmal. So the whole question of the status of electricity, whether it's as far as Isurim are concerned, meaning Melechah Shabbos, as far as mitzvahs are concerned, which we want to discuss today, this is all a very contemporary issue in the Poskim. And if you take a look at your first page, you'll see that the Encyclopedia Talmudit dedicates a lot of literature just to give us a background, an introduction to the question of chashmal and halacha. And he writes that there are sfarim that are exclusively dedicated from cover to cover to this very complex halachic topic. He writes that the first tshuvas ever written on this topic were relevant to the telegraph and the telephone on Shabbos, or to using electric lights on Shabbos and turning them off on Shabbos, where the matzah that was prepared by electric machines that do the lisha, for example, and there's a din of lishma in the creation of matzahs to make it shmura matzah, whether you can fulfill your mitzvah with such matzahs. The same question applied with listening to the shofar, for example, through the telephone. And in the entire paragraph, in the entire presentation here, he goes through electrons and neutrons and what he calls the mit'an chashmali, the zerem chashmali, the positive, the negative, and how they impact on each other, and how you could rub certain things and create electric impulses. He goes on and on with this. What I found fascinating in this introduction was two quotes. The first quote he says in the name of the Chazon Ish, which you'll see about 15 lines up from the bottom of the page. And the Chazon Ish was of the opinion that chashmal, the use of electricity, involves what he calls ma'agal chashmali, to sort of close a circuit. And he says that on Shabbos, when you do such a thing, you're chayev mishum meleches boneh. And I think what he means is that when you have different parts that do not form a whole, and you give them a tzura, you give them some sort of a structure, that itself is meleches bona. And in the language of the Chazon Ish, he says chibur achut lezerem achashmal. He says ma'orer kochot chashmaliim hamutbaim bechut atzmo. So I think he's talking about the filament, which somehow becomes energized, if you will, by an electric impulse. And he says that when a person turns on electricity, hu mafil et koach hachashmali, and basically what he does is he violates meleches boneh. In the next paragraph, he quotes from Shlomo Zalman Auerbach as saying that although the physics of electricity might not exactly reflect some of the halachic conclusions about electricity, nevertheless, He says, "Ein litchashev im dvarim she'ein chushei ha'adam argishim osam." And this is a topic unto itself that reverberates throughout the halacha. And whether we define the halacha based on what we see or based on what really is. And he says that dinei halacha, the halacha is nikbaim, is determined v'der kal pi mara einenu, based on what we see. And he says, even though we don't see this zerem, this electric impulse, doleku boer, we don't see it burning, but nevertheless, since it heats up the chut shebenora, al yidei chichuk elektronim bechut, and he says, al pizeh donim es habenatek, he says, he who cuts off this electric impulse is judged as a machabe, as if he shuts off a light. Lefish al pi mara einenu hachut dolek. Now, again, this is a little bit of a complicated business. When I look at an electric bulb, do I see a chut dolek? I don't know. That's arguable. I mean, I definitely see light, but I'm not sure if I see fire.
In that time, right, where you had a filament,
right,
that was fire. That was on Thursday, not today.
So I don't know. Is a filament fire? I mean, I don't even know if I see it as fire. What do you say, David?
It's not a fire because you're in a vacuum and you can't burn. There's no oxygen to burn. It's not a fire.
Right.
Except certainly, but it's not a fire for sure.
So when he says that we see it as if it were a fire, and he says that we see the zerem as if it's shemen, the mafsik is as ev ki'ilu mechabe. I mean, these are all complicated issues. And I actually remember that way back in the day, my father, Zichron Levracha, found that on Rosh Hashanah, it was almost impossible for him to project his voice in such a way that the entire shul could hear him. We had about 1,300 people in shul on Rosh Hashanah. And my father was also after surgery, and he wrote a shaila to Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach about what had just come out at that time was battery-operated microphones. Now, this is Beinenu, because if you publicize this, they'll deny it. But we have actually the original. And Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach was inclined to be matir, battery-operated microphones. This became an issue between conservative and orthodox, you know. But be that as it may, let me give you a little bit of introduction before we start page 2, which is going to occupy us today. And that is, we're not going to discuss at great length the violation of Shabbos through electricity, turning on and turning off lights. We're going to focus on mitzvos today. Now, let me give you a list of mitzvos that have to be addressed in terms of electricity. The first one is Hadlakas Ner Shabbos. And this is extremely relevant, in my humble opinion, with regard to hotels. Because if you've ever been in a hotel for Shabbos, I'm sure you all have, you'll wonder where a woman should be lighting candles. And they put this tray out in the lobby with 1,000, you know, what do they call them? Tea lights. Yeah, 1,000 tea lights, and you make a bruch on that. You know, I have my doubts about it. And as radical as this might sound, I would rather that she live in her hotel room. Of course, they're not going to allow her to light fire, but at least let her light electricity. And I would even go further. I would say that. And somebody told me that Rabban Soloveitchik, Zichron Levracha, also held this way, that even, forget about hotels, even when a woman lights Shabbos candles at home, she might be advised to turn off the lights, the electric lights in the room where she's lighting, make the bracha, light the eish, the neros, make the bracha, light the neros, and then turn on the lights, Lechavit Shabbos, and then make the bracha. You know, with the covering the eyes and the whole bit. Meaning that the electric lights are really giving more light into the room than the neros. And I wonder if we should be excluding the electric lights from the bracha. I think the bracha should be chal on the electric lights. Again, you'd have to have in mind that she's turning on the electric lights l'kavod Shabbos. But in terms of electricity for Neros Shabbos, number two, electricity for Havdalah, and we'll soon see that Reb Chaim Ozer actually made Havdalah on electric lights. He was the final posek in Litta. What about electric lights for Ner Chanukah? May you and I, would probably, be totally repulsed by that idea. They do that in storefronts or amongst other branches of Judaism, and maybe they'll do it on the lawn in the front, the front of the White House. I don't know, but what about easier questions like a ner chashmali, an electric light for bedikas chametz? They are more inclined to think that bedikas chametz is not dependent upon a chal shem ner in halacha, but rather on light itself. And since I mentioned Ner Chanukah before, and I mentioned the idea of on a Friday night a woman having in mind the electric lights as well, what would be in Ner Chanukah if the room is already well lit by the electricity, and then I go ahead and make a brach in the Ner Chanukah? Now, here we have a double question, because the halacha of Ner Chanukah is that we light the Ner Chanukah b'layla, so that it gives off a light. And if the lights are already on, maybe one could argue that that's not really the fulfillment of Ner Chanukah. Now, with regard to yahrzeit candles and stuff like that, or for example, the case of, which is common today, somebody who donates light for the shul, which back in the day, 100 years ago, meant that they would buy candles with his money, with his contribution. What about the electric lights in the shul? Would that be a fulfillment of a pledge to donate light for the Beis HaKnesses? And here also, I'm inclined to think that you don't need a Chal Hashem Ner over here with all the dinim. You just have to light up the Beis HaKnesses. I'm not sure about what's called the Ner. Ner Tamid, right. The Ner Tamid, although again, in many modern Orthodox shuls, I assume it's the same in Clan Park, I simply don't remember, you have an electric Ner Tamid, am I right?
For sure.
Yeah, this is common today. But you know what? Again, I'm not trying to introduce the Chumra of the Week Club here, because my style is I usually like to be Mekil and not be Machmir. But if there's any light that I would think should be lit with candles or with oil, I would say the Ner Tamid would be my first on the list. And the reason for that is because we're getting close to Parashat, but now halachically, we're really plugging into Parashat Tetzaveh and the Ner Shebamigdash, because I think the Ner Tamid is a replacement for the Ner Shebamigdash. And, we should make light of that, because our goal in halacha is to transform our shul into a migdash ma'at. And one of the ways we do so is with the Ner Tamid. Now, to say that Aaron HaKohen would have been yotze the mitzvah of Adlakas Ner Shebamigdash with an electric candelabra, I think that's pushing it. And I'll tell you why as we go along. So again, my thoughts on this matter are contra everything we know in Minhagim, because could you imagine if I got some sort of major rabbinic body to support my position that an Ner Tamid has to be lit from Shemen Zayas, and then I would add Shemen Zayas Zach, it's going to be a lot of fun, keeping such an Ner going for 24/7. Now they have these yahrzeit candles that last for the entire Shiva, so that's okay. All right, let's
do the same thing with the looks with Neris Chanukah.
Oh, and the same thing should be Lachor Neris Chanukah. Now, Neris Chanukah, we could be a little bit more relaxed about, because I'm not sure that Ner Chanukah is a replacement for the Ner Shebamigdash. Although there is a shita of the Ramban, that the Ramban at the beginning of Parshas Palosha claims that our Ner Chanukah is somehow a replacement for the Nesh of HaMikdash. There's also Baal HaMar who says the reason why we're enjoined from any benefit from the Ner Chanukah is because it's a replacement for the Ner Sheh B'Migdash, and the Ner Sheh B'Migdash was also by Nor B'Toras Hekdesh. Fine, but again, the classical understanding of Ner Chanukah is that it's Zechel Nes, it's just meant to remind us of the miracle, not necessarily to replace the Ner Sheh B'Beis HaMikdash. Okay, but that's a long... Yeah, all right, Bobby. So that's a long discussion. We can fight this out. But let me just say a few words about Ner Shabbos. What's the issue regarding Ner Shabbos? So it's fascinating that the issue of Ner Shabbos really breaks down to three different elements. What I mean is there are three different possible objections to using electric lights for Ner Shabbos. The first one is if we define a ner as eish, and again, once again, we're wondering whether the filament in an electric bulb, for example, is eish. Very difficult to call that eish. So that if my definition of ner is that ner equals eish, as far as Shabbos is concerned, it's not just to create light, but I need a ner, and a ner means eish, then I have a problem. Number two, my second objection is that ner should be something that has shemen and psila. That's what a ner is. For example, if you go back to the mitzvah in Parashas Tetzaveh, it's not just an eish. The eish is not enough. The eish has to come from shemen upsila. There's no shemen upsila in electric lights. And finally, which I think is the most fascinating dimension of the issue of electric lights for Ner Shabbos, is what we call Maisa Hadloka. Ner Shabbos, if I assume, requires a Maisa Hadloka, which means, for example, let's say I happen to have a Ner that was Daluk, you know, from yesteryear, and comes Friday night, I want to make a bracha on it, I can't do so, I need a Maisa Hadloka. We'll soon see this in Tosfos on the first, actually the second page of Yomar Makomos. The question really is fascinating, whether or not electricity is called a Maisa Hadloka. When I just flip the switch, is that really a Maisa Hadloka? And the one who discusses this at great length was, for first, you know, historically, was the chief rabbi of Yerushalayim, Rav Tzvi Hirsch Frank, the Har Tzvi, which you'll see on page 5. And he writes, after a long discussion here on the bottom of your page 5 about how electricity works, in which he writes that levarer ha'inyan, whether or not you can use electric lights for Ner Shabbos, he says, nakdim tochen sidu arichas hamor hazeh, how does it operate? Hazerem shenase v'neva bikoro mitachanat koach. He wants to talk about electricity that comes from a power station. That's not always true. You know, we have battery operated and generated operated, but he's talking about the electric power stations and how it sends off these electric impulses through very thin chute mateches that reach a long distance until finally it enters into your house. Ubagia hazerem lachutim adakim ha'elu yehofchu kerega legachel shal mateches. And this is a real problem because, Rabosai, if electricity equals a gacheles shel mateches, which means like a burning piece of metal, because again, the filaments are metal, he says, that can't be meleches mechabe on Shabbos because mechabe es hamateches is potur. And that comes under the halacha melacha shein tzricha legufa. Are you familiar with that? When you put out a light, you're interested not in the pechem, which is like the coal, the charcoal that ends after you extinguish the fire, but rather you want to get rid of the light. If you want to get rid of the light, you're not interested in creating a pechem, then your machabe is a classical case, ayin Shabbos perek sheni, of melacha shein tzricha legufa. So by identifying electricity as a gachelah shel mateches, you know, you can have a real problem if you want to postulate that you're not allowed to turn off lights on Shabbos. Because in the worst case scenario, that's a malacha d'rabbanan, not a d'oraisa. And then he goes on to say that the way the hadlaka works when you turn on a switch is that it creates some sort of a galgal katan. It becomes like a circular kind of movement. And then he goes on into great details describing how that works. And it creates some sort of bridge. And as a result of this rotisserie and the bridge that it engenders, he says that the whole story is Grama Bialma. Now, what's Grama Bialma? Well, he goes on, and this you'll see on the left column, to quote a Sugyan Sanhedrin, where Reuven shoots out an arrow, and he has a shield in his hand in which he's going to protect himself from this arrow. Somebody comes along and removes the shield. As a result, the arrow hits him. And the Gemara establishes that you cannot be chayav for that. And although that's a Gemara in Sanhedrin, it really underlies the entire second parak of Masechta Bava Basra. It's called Girei Delei. This is not Girei Delei. He's not killing someone with his own arrows, because what he's doing here is just, he's removing the shield and he's allowing the arrows to hit its target. I once discussed this in Or Chaim. Joe, were you there that time?
So far, I don't remember.
You don't remember, they have a shear there. Is it before Kiddush or after Kiddush? It's after Kiddush, right?
Yeah.
So after Kiddush, we had a shear on this new thing they developed. What's it called? The switch, the Shabbos switch, or something. I don't remember exactly what they call it.
Yes, yes.
You remember this? It's a hot topic. And basically, what they tried to do is they tried to create a blockage where the electricity is basically turned on before Shabbos, and you just remove the blockage, and therefore you didn't really turn on the electricity. I mean, this would radically change our observance of Shabbos. And the one who got involved in this is a rabbi from Toronto. I don't think you would have heard of him. Rav Shlomo Miller, maybe you heard of him. And
nope, never heard of him.
And he was the anti-kosher switch. You know, he was the mitarei for a kosher switch. And it all boils down to this concept called bidka demaya, means when you remove a blockage, and as a result, there's a rush and an urge of the waters coming, or in this case, the chetz coming, and that's called grama, for which you're not chayev, neither in ritzicha nor in Shabbos. And therefore, Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank is of the opinion that even if you would overcome all the issues in an electric bulb, for example, regarding Ner Shabbos, you still have one last issue, and that's Maisa Hadlaka. He says it's not an active, direct Maisa Hadlaka, it's indirect, it's called Grama. And then in the last paragraph, you see where it says, My Taima, My Hai Taima. He says that, I'll just read to you some of the language. He says, L'chora, so the language is a little bit complex here. He says, L'chumra, yesh l'tzadeh, d'besovavo la'kafto, shebetoch hamarach, hamarich, eno ela grama bi'alma. When he means by chumra, he means to reject the possibility of being mekayim the mitzvah adlokas ner Shabbos through chashmal. And he says that it's similar to the case of Grama in Masechta Sanhedrin, where the tris is biyado, because he claims that Madlik Chashmal Eino Osa Dovra Nidlak. He doesn't really burn something or create a light, but rather Mazmin Gesher. He organizes some sort of bridge that allows the electric impulse to jump and create this Zerem Chashmal, and that's called Grama. Now, Rav Hirsch Frank assumes that you need a Maisa Adloka in Ner Shabbos. Is that really so? Let's take a look on page 2 in the name of Rabbeinu Tam. The Gemara here in Bamem Adlikin vacillates back and forth as to the nature of the mitzvah of Ner Shabbos. According to one opinion, Hadlokas Ner Shabbos Chova. According to the second opinion, Hadlokas Ner Shabbos Mitzvah. It's not a chovah, but a mitzvah. Now, if you take a look at Tosfos, Divrei HaMashkil Chova, you'll see he says that it says in the Gemara that Mayim Achronim Chova, and that's because of course, Melech Sdomus. And he says that in this case, Chova Lagabi Rechitzas Yodayim Bechamin Karile Chova. So basically, Chova, according to this Tosfos, is on a lower Madrega than Mitzvah. Mitzvah means an absolute command, and it's obligatory. Then he writes, Yesher Otzim Lomar, De'ein Levarech Adlokas Ner, Midakarile Chova. He says, if you're equating Hadlokas Ner Shabbos with Mayim Achronim, and the Gemara never mentions a word about a bracha on Ner Shabbos, then Chova means that there's some sort of Kiyum HaMitzvah, but it's not obligatory, and therefore it doesn't justify a bracha. The Omer Rabbeinu Tam Deshibushu, Rabbeinu Tam says this entire presentation is entirely mistaken, and he says, the word chova with regard to mayim achronim means for safety reasons, what we call shmiras hanefesh. Aval adlokas ner, he chova shel mitzvahs oneg shabbos. So the word chova here in this context, claims Rabbeinu Tam, is totally different than the word chova with regard to mayim achronim. Mayim achronim chova means you must protect yourself. But protecting yourself from danger does not entail a mitzvah, and therefore doesn't generate a bracha. Mashen kein chova here in Ner Shabbos means it's a chova as a fulfillment of the mitzvah of Oneg Shabbos. Now there are many ways to fulfill the mitzvah of Oneg Shabbos, but the Chachamim organized and prescribed this particular method of Oneg Shabbos. It's got to be Oneg Shabbos with Ner Shabbos, and therefore Teunim Bracha. It requires a bracha. Fine.
Strange lesson to use the lesson of chleva by Mayim Achronim.
Right.
It should use the lesson of Isa Toiva.
Well,
I think
Elliot, it's good to see you, by the way. I haven't seen you in a while. I think, Elliot, what he's saying here by chova is that you and I might say, well, the danger element here is very low ebb, and I can take my chances, so I walk away from the table without washing my hands. What the Chachamim wanted to establish was that the chance of endangering your eyes, for example, might be great enough that you have to take precautions. That's called chova. But Rabbeinu Tam is saying it's not the kind of chova that would apply to a mitzvah. It's not a ma'aseh mitzvah. You know, if I could protect myself from Melech Sdomus in a different way, I could choose any method that would just get me to my objective. But here, in their Shabbos, Chazal established that Oneg Shabbos has to be fulfilled in this particular way. But what I want to do with you today is the last few lines on the right column. The Od Nirul Rabbeinu Tam, okay, Rabbeinu Tam has established that the word chova here in the context of Ner Shabbos means an absolute mitzvah with a bracha. And now he says, im haisa mudlekes v'omedes, he says, well, what happens if you have a light that's already lit? Says Rabbeinu Tam, tzorech lechabos ulahachzir ulahadlik. He's got to put it out and rekindle it, because the original light was not lit l'shem Shabbos. However, earlier in Tosfos presents a different opinion. He says, "Im ha'isem udlekes v'omedes lo ayatzarach l'chabosa v'lachzar u'lahadlika." Now, there seems to be a fundamental machlokas here, two deis in Tosfos. One day is anonymous, the other is Rabbeinu Tam, as to whether or not the mitzvah of Ner Shabbos requires a ma'aseh hadlaka. The first opinion says, no, I just have to guarantee that there's light in the room so I can eat my meal to light. In those days, candlelight. And that itself will generate a kiyum of Oneg Shabbos. I don't have to do the ma'aseh hadlaka. Rabbeinu Tam, on the other hand, requires a ma'aseh hadlaka. But in truth, Rabbosai, I'm going to argue the following. that even Rabbeinu Tam agrees that you don't need a Maisa Adlaka. When Rabbeinu Tam says that there was a Ner Mudlak V'Omed, and you have to put it out, extinguish it in order to rekindle it, he doesn't mean a Maisa Adlaka. What he means is that it's got to be a Ner L'Kvod Shabbos. In other words, if the Ner was lit for secular reasons, whatever it is, you know, I needed light in my room, that Ner has nothing to do with Shabbos. What I need is a Ner that's designated for Shabbos. If the Ner was lit for another purpose, I got to put it out and rekindle it. But that doesn't mean that I require a Maisa Adlaka. What I have to do is guarantee that there's a Ner Dolok. If I had a magical way of twitching my nose and lighting a Ner for Shabbos without a Maisa Adlaka at all, that would be sufficient. Rabbeinu Tam is only requiring that it be a Ner Shabbos. But Ner Daluk, as long as the Ner is a Ner Shabbos and it's lit, I don't need a Maisa Adlaka. Even Rabbeinu Tam agrees to that. And therefore, the assumption of Rav Hirsch Frank in his Heart Tzvi that electric lights would be a problem for Ner Shabbos because there's no Maisa Adlaka, it's only Grama. It's like the case of Zarek Chetzu Trispiyado. Who told him that you need a Maisa Adlaka for Ner Shabbos? I don't think so. I don't believe so. And in fact, yeah, go ahead.
If you have an automatic switch, like a digital timer, that turns on the light just before Shabbos,
and you set it up for the purpose of Shabbos,
set it up for that reason,
that would be enough. Because again, the whole purpose here is to see that there's a Ner Dolok. I need to benefit from the light of the Ner. You know, in the case of the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash, there was a mitzvah Maisa Adlaka. You can argue, therefore, that I don't care about the light, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't need the light, and the Mikdash doesn't need the light, the Heichal, but you need a Maisa Adlaka. One can ostensibly argue that. Reb Chaim has a chiddush that that's not so. I and Reb Chaim Hilchas Yisurei Mikdash. Hilchas Bias Mikdash. But other than Reb Chaim, we all believe that Baalos Chasaneros means you need a Maisa Adlaka. But that's not so in Ner Shabbos. Ner Shabbos means I need a Ner Dolok. Even in Ner Chanukah, I'm not sure exactly what the mitzvah is. Whether it's a Maisa Adlaka or a Ner Dolok, it has to be a Ner Chanukah for sure. But I don't know if I need a Maisa Adlaka. Well, we pass an Adlaka Osa Mitzvah. But there was a man the Yom in the Gemara who maintained that Anocha Osa Mitzvah, even without a Maisa Adlaka. But certainly in the case of Ner Shabbos, Hanocha Osa Mitzvah, I don't need a Maisa Adlaka. But the real problem, I think, with Ner Shabbos, with electric lights, is not the Maisa Adlaka, but rather whether it's a Ner or not. Chazal established a Mitzvah of Adlokas Ner. And I don't think that electricity is a Ner. Now, there's a whole discussion here in the Poskim, which honestly is beyond my comprehension. There's something called an Avuka. An avuka is usually a combination of many different psilos that form one torch. And that's okay for Havdalah, but not okay for Ner Shabbos. Why exactly electric lights should be an avuka? Can anybody give me any insight into that? I don't know. Again, Tzarech Iyun, that's something you might look up here in the poskim on page 5. But be that as it may, fluorescent lights become even more complicated. They're even less similar to Aish. And the question that I raised with you before, supposing the room is already lit up with electricity, what point is there to light another Ner Shabbos? And therefore, again, I don't like to advocate chumris, but I'm really in favor of turning the lights off before you light Ner Shabbos, and then turning them on. So that even if I assume that the electric lights do not constitute Ner, but nevertheless they give light. And if they give light, then what have I accomplished here by lighting a Ner Shabbos? Now, as far as Havdol is concerned, Kuli Alma Lo Pligi, that you need Eish. The bracha itself is Borei, Ma'orei Ha'esh. Can you make a brach of Bori Morei Ha'esh on Chashmal? There's no Shalheves. There's no flame. Or shall we say, there's no Esh that is consuming some sort of combustible oil or fuel. So where's the Ma'orei Ha'esh? And that's why it's a Pele that Rav Chaim Ozer is reportedly the one who instituted that Avdolah should be made on electric lights. And his agenda was, because there was some issue about whether electricity was allowed on Shabbos, and it's even more complex on Yontif, because there's more of a reason to be makel on Yontif, al tzmelechas ochel nefesh, etc., etc. And therefore, Chaim Ozer wanted to take a public stand and make sure that everyone understood that electricity is eish, and it's a violation, according to Rav Chaim Ozer, of Melechas Mavir. Of course, the Chazon Ish was later than Rav Chaim Ozer, and he knew that that position of Rav Chaim Ozer is very problematic, to identify electricity as Mavir, and therefore the Chazon Ish came up with another idea, that electricity is Melechas Bone, because you're completing a circuit. Now, with regard to Ner Chanukah, we have a whole to do in the poskim, because there's no Shemen, there's no Psila, there's no Shalheves, we don't have anything. There's nothing really that's getting burnt up. So how can you call that a Ner Chanukah? Not only that, the halach is that you require a shear of Shemen in the Ner, that it should be madlik for a half hour, that's the shear adlaka. In the case of electric lights, you know, there's no such thing as a Zman adlaka. The electric lights will continue until you put them out. So what's the shir adlaka with regard to the shemen, so to speak, of Ner Shabbos? With regard to Bdikas Chametz, Kuliyavalo Pligi, that the purpose here is not to light a Ner, but simply to get light. Again, not just diffused light, it should be concentrated light. And therefore, the poskim advocate the use of a flashlight. And I would say to you that a flashlight is much better than an air. You want to use an air at the beginning of your bdika because of traditional reasons, that's fine. But I would very quickly get rid of the air and substitute with a battery-operated flashlight. Because the point is that you need R. That's the purpose of bdika's comments. But again, there are poskim who say that, you know, it says bodkim es hachametz, the Mishnah says Liar Haner, and the Gemara has a whole discussion about how we derive Ner, and all the occasion there in the Gzeir Shavuz. And Chashmal, even if it's battery operated, and even if it focuses your light, is still not a Ner. With regard to a Ner Neshama, once again, the minhag is that you need a Shemen and Psila. And, you know, to use Chashmal as a Ner Neshama is not accepted. However, with regard to Neros in the Beis Hamikdash, in the Beis HaKnesses, we have here a whole collection of poskim who allow it. So if a person takes upon himself to contribute the light in the shul, he doesn't have to bring Neros in. However, with regard to the Ner Tamid, that's something that I think we have to think about for a long time. By the way, there's even a discussion here amongst all these poskim here that he collects, in 20 some odd pages here, about whether or not you're allowed to light an electric menorah that has seven kanim to it, because we're not allowed to do something that's similar to the candelabra in the Beis HaMikdash. But if on the other hand we're going to say that certainly electricity is not there, then there would be no reason to be to be hesitant about lighting an electric what do they call it? It's not a candelabra. I don't know what you call it. You know, the seven bulbs. What do they call it? Oh, I don't know the name for it. Ellie?
No, I was going to ask regarding the Neneshama. The ones that they have in the shul that you just turn on the light bulb beside the name. Is that's just symbolic? That doesn't do the trick?
I know what you mean. Those Yizkor walls, right?
Yeah. What's the point of that?
I would say that you're right. That would seem to indicate that the minhag is, not the way I said it before, to light a candle as a Ner Neshama, but even electricity is good enough. But, you know, I'm not sure exactly, are those when they light up those bulbs, are they doing it on behalf of someone, a relative who's alive? Or they just, you know, they just look at the dates and it could be 1850 and they'll light the bulbs, you know?
No, no. Usually, it's for the yurt site of the individual. So, but
no, that I agree with you. I know it's on that day.
No,
but I'm saying, does that mean that no one is lighting a classical Ner Neshama, and therefore, you know, this guy died on February 2nd, 1985, 1855. So when we get to that date every year, we're going to turn on the bulb. He doesn't even have great grandchildren.
Right.
If he does, they may have married out of the faith. I don't know, but that's for sure. But what I'm just... You see, in Canada, I can't crack those jokes. But in America, it's a very serious joke, because probably 90% of the offspring of those guys who are up on the wall are mamish goyim. You know what I'm saying? I remember when my father, I think I told you this once, he wanted to send Sifrei Torah to Eretz Yisrael. Our shul in Brooklyn, New York, had tons of sfarim. And when he tried to clarify whether any descendants left of those who donated the Sifrei Torah a century ago, he couldn't find anyone on the face of the earth. I mean, again, it's a tragic statement, but in Canada, I think they're a little bit more traditional. There's not so much, unless you go out to Vancouver, I don't know, but at least in your part of town, there's not so much intermarriage, as far as I know. Baruch Hashem. Anyway, Rabosai, these are just, you know, some very... sketchy introductory remarks to this very complicated topic. What I would like to do with your reshus, A plus B, A, I'd like to leave this now, if you're willing to give me your answer in email to the following question. Do you want to continue with this topic? Because we just barely scratched the surface. And B, with your reshus, I'd like to talk a little bit about the mitzvah of getting drunk on Purim, which has nothing to do with Ner Shabbos or with the status of electricity. But just for the remaining few minutes that we have.
For sure.
Okay, the Gemara tells us in Masechta Megillah, Chayev Inish Libsumi Bepuria Adelo Yoda Bein Or Haman LeBarach Mardechai. And I got a hold of a sefer called Sichas Elio, Rav Elio Rot, and he writes that the word Inish here, Inish, which literally means a human being, in Yiddish we might call him a mensch, is deliberately used here as opposed to Chayev Ben Yisrael or Chayev Adam or something like that. Chayev Inish. Inish means that even after he gets drunk, he still has his wits about him. The Ramah writes in Arachaim Tofresh Tzadihei, Ein tzarech lishtaker kol kach el sheyishtek tzas yosef milimudo v'yoshen mitoch sheyoshen eino yedeh ben or homin lebarach Mardechai. So that's the opinion which dates back to the Rambam, that you can be yotzei this mitzvah by going to sleep. I'm not advocating that position, but I still do think that there's got to be a limit to how drunk you're going to get drunk. And the reason I say this is because not only is it going to be a tremendously complicated issue to get these people who are drunk to daven mincha, to daven mairiv, and recite kriyat shema, but again, if they haven't crossed over the red line, I think their tefillos and their kriyat shema will be the most profound that they are the whole year round. So please understand that I'm a big advocate of getting drunk on Purim. But on the other hand, not to get too drunk, because you get too drunk, there's no way, no how. I mean, the poskim write, would you be able to speak rationally, cogently, coherently, I should say, in front of a king? Then you could daven. But if you can't reach that level, you can't daven. So if the state of drunkenness awakens within you a certain inspiration to daven, then tovel abracha, that's what we want. But if on the other hand you're going to cross the boundaries here, now that's just on a level of tefillah, but forget about tefillah. We can talk about Bein Orim L'Chavero, Chas V'Sholom, being Mevayish someone. And unfortunately I've seen this with my own eyes, because you know every year my wife and I would host the yeshiva for Purim, and I can tell you stories that would make your hair stand on end about what people did in the state of drunkenness. and how many people are humiliated by it. It's terrible. And besides Benom L'Chavero, in terms of things that come out of people's mouths, I mean, when they speak, we also have a Benom L'Chavero Nezikin, you know, people damage other people's property when they get really drunk. So these are things, that's why I say, you know, my Chavrusa, who was unfortunately murdered, Rav Moshe Chwersky, was once sitting at his grandfather's Purim suit and he was drinking, and Rav Salvechik sent him, Moshe, you'll get drunk! He warned him. I mean, like, you know, what do you mean you'll get drunk? As I state in the Gemara, that says you're supposed to get drunk. You know? But that's the way, I guess, a Litvak looks at it. In any event, what I wanted to say is the following. The Mishnah Berurah emphasizes that the drinking on Purim should be drinking of wine, because all the nisim of Purim took place through wine, and that's why we're drinking wine on Purim. Whether it's the original, you know, mishteh of Achashverosh, when because of his getting drunk, he called it Vashti, and as a result, Esther was called in to replace Vashti. Whether we talk about Haman's ultimate downfall during the mishteh that was thrown by Esther, in which they were drinking wine, Chazal saw that the obligation of drinking wine is a zecher, is a commemoration of the great miracle of Purim. But once again, this has to be in the context of Pirsume Nisa. And if it gets to the point where there's no Pirsume Nisa, it becomes Shikar Kalot, and we know what that led to, then we cannot accept this. The Avudraham points out that Noach's name is Noach without the letter Vav, and the reason why the name Noach appears without the letter Vav as a chaser, he says, is to indicate that Noach fell short of what he should have been and he got drunk. In the Megillah it says, again this is just a remez from the Avudraham, but again keep in mind the Avudraham was 6 centuries ago, and he writes that in the Pasuk it says V'noach bar bo asar bo, and the word V'noach is spelled Nun Vav Ches, because here we're talking about the Jewish people resting on the 14th day of Adar after they destroyed their Amaleki enemies, and the Noach with a Vav is indicative of the proper way of using wine, not the way Noach did, and he was, you know, he couldn't have the Vav. I remember that on one particular Purim, one of my great students got very, very drunk. At first I thought maybe he was faking it, because, you know, it's macho to get drunk, and he's an 18-year-old healthy boy. But then I saw him fall into a outside of a closet. And as a result of the fall, the closet opened. This, we used to live in Unsdorf, and we had 7 metal folding chairs inside the closet that fell on his head, and he didn't budge. We put him to sleep in a bathtub, and he woke up at about 3 a.m. wondering, what is he doing in Rabbi Berzon's bathtub? We had another guy who is stoned. Now, this first guy, if I were to tell you how successful he is in what he does, I mean, I couldn't even begin to describe it. But there's another guy who's also very chashuv today. He made Aliyah, and he got drunk. We put him to sleep at the end of a bed, and we left a pail near the end of the bed. Sure enough, in the middle of the night, he rolled over, did what he had to do in the pail, and went back to sleep. It was like another Nes Purim. But all sorts of things happen on Purim. Now, the real goal of Purim, the Poskim say, is to create Achdus. And this is Keneged Haman, who said, Am Mefuzar Meforad. So unity, which is of course expressed primarily in Mishloach Manos, is a main theme, a central theme in Purim. And obviously, if drinking on Purim breaks down the barriers between people, and they become very close to each other, and they embrace, and they dance, and they hug each other. I mean, that's what Purim is all about. But if on the other hand it comes to what we call chichuchim, that's antithetical to Purim. So the Simcha of Purim is very unique, and it's very central. And in the Sefer that I told you called Sichas Elio, he writes that the halacha of Chayiv Inish LeBesuei BePurim is a halacha not in Simcha in general. We have the mitzvah of Simcha and Yontif, and we don't find Chayiv Inish LeBesuei BeYontif, but rather it's a kiyum in Seudas Purim. It's a unique dimension of the mitzvah of Seudas Purim. And he writes that Ma tam halacha zu, what's this whole business that he doesn't know the difference between Ar Haman and Baruch Mordechai? He writes, Adarab al-Khora, he should know the difference. I mean, that's what Purim is all about. So he writes that the inyan of Adelo Yada can be understood in one of two ways. He suggests two different approaches, but he says in both cases we have to realize that there's Mordechai and there's Haman. One approach he suggests is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Yeshua was a twofold Yeshua. On the one hand, Mordechai was elevated to the Mishnah Lamelech status. That itself is a tremendous ness. On the other hand, Haman was destroyed. You get to the point where you don't understand the difference between these two Hatzolos, and they merge into one. And there's a lot of deeper meaning here. I am Pachatz Yitzchak on Purim. Number two, he suggests that we have to come to the awareness that it's the love of Hashem for Klal Yisrael that brought about the Ness of Purim. On our own, left our own druthers, the nation of Israel was helpless. There was no way that they could achieve Hatzalah from the powerful decree of Haman sealed and signed by Achashverosh. But rather, we are helpless. We are totally dependent and reliant upon Hashem. That's the message of Purim. And the state of drunkenness is an indication of this. When we lose our sharp ability of focusing our intellect, we are absolutely dependent upon others. And that's a realization that Klal Yisrael is dependent totally on HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Okay, just another 2-3 minutes. The Yad Ephraim says that in terms of getting drunk on Purim, intoxicated on Purim, it's ad delo yada. He understands it ad, but velo ad bichlal. Meaning, if he's going to get drunk to the point where he passes delo yada, then it's already not a fulfillment of the mitzvah. The mitzvah is to come to ad delo yada, but not further than that. That's a big chiddush of the Yad Ephraim. And he says that a person should achieve through intoxication on Purim a level of simcha where his hodaya, his sheva for Hashem, will include and incorporate all the miracles, all the nisim. In other words, a person who's focused on one particular dimension of his life, even if he wants to thank Hashem, it's very hard for him, it's a great challenge for him to think out of the box about other things that happened in his life, in the life of his family, in the life of his community, and certainly in the history of Klal Yisrael. The idea of Adlo Yada is to get to the point in which he incorporates and encompasses all the nisim, all the great miracles that Hashem wrought for us in his shevach, in his thanks to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And if you take a look in the poskim, although many poskim will say that getting drunk is not necessary, it's a voluntary mitzvah, but the simple pshat, both in the Gemara and in the Shulchan Aruch, is chayev inchi, that a person is obligated. It's not a matter of being voluntary. It's not necessary. No. According to most poskim, it's an absolute chov. Whether or not, like the Ramah says, it just get so drunk that you fall asleep, or whether it means literally ad lo yada. The Hasidim say, and you'll see this in a sefer called Bira Hasidus. He writes that according to Hasidus, a person has to libsume bipuria, means to be intoxicated with Purim. Purim itself should intoxicate him. A person should be so infused with happiness and excitement for the Purim miracle that he comes to Avas Hashem, to the love of Hashem, to the point to which he loves the mitzvahs of Hashem, and he can no longer differentiate between different parts of the story of Purim, whether it's the good parts of Mordechai, the bad parts of Haman, because basically the ultimate level that a person should reach in Ad Lo Yada is to realize that everything is from Hashem. And even that which we think, Chayav Adam Levarech Ala Ra, even that which we think is Ra in our eyes, and in this world it is evil, but ultimately from a divine perspective it's good. And that's why when it says Ad Lo Yada, according to Hasidus, it means you shouldn't have the idea and the das that we have today, which means the das of post Chet HaKadmon, when we ate from the Eitz HaDas. When we ate from the Eitz HaDas, our das is to differentiate between that which is healthy, that which is not healthy, that which is good on the surface, that which is bad on the surface. But there's a das that goes beyond the post, or prior to, I should say, the Chet HaKadmon. That's Adam HaRishon Kodem L'Chet, and that das is to appreciate that everything is good. And we should be blessing Hashem for what we think is bad with the same excitement as the good. And that obviously is a level that's hard to achieve unless you completely undermine das as we know it today. And that's the Ad Lo Yada. Not the das of today, but to reach on Purim, the das of Adam HaRishon Kodem L'Chet. And perhaps that's what the Arizal meant, I'm just suggesting, when he compared Yom HaKippurim to Purim. Because on Yom HaKippurim, we're like Adam HaRishon Kodem L'Chet, on the Madrega of Malachim. And maybe somehow through the Chayav Adam Livsumi, Ad Delo Yada, not this das, but the das of a Malach, the das of Adam HaRishon Kodem L'Chet, the absolute simcha, which encompasses everything, which encompasses the Haman part of it, and as well as the Mordechai. Everything together is all part of a divine scheme. It's all miracles. As the Ramban says in the end, Parshas Bo, ultimately the challenge is to understand that which we think is Teva, that which we see on the surface as Adam, as Olam, Kiminhago, Noheg, is really Ness. It's although the theme of Purim is Nes Nistar, but from the Nes Nistar, we come to appreciate all Nisim. Sometimes we need a Nes Nigla, and sometimes we see the Nes Nistar. The Gemara says in Chulin, Esther ben Ator Minayin, the Gaon is famous for saying, the Gemara is looking for a source for Esther in the Torah. Why? And the answer is because Esther was in Golos. And where do we have some sort of a remez in the Torah that Hashem will protect us after He rejected us, so to speak, after He exiled us? And you and I know the Christian theologians base themselves on the fact that we went into exile and we were rejected, chas v'shalom, by Hashem. The answer is no. Hashem has a love for us, even in Golos. And that's what we're looking for in the Torah. And the Torah says, Anochi aster aster esponai. But even so, Hashem is with us. He's our patron, He's our friend, and He's going to guarantee that Netzach Yisrael lo yishaker, v'kol achosim bo, and all those who depend upon Him will not be disappointed, b'chol dar, in any generation. That's the emuna, that's the faith of the Nes Nistar, of the miracle in Golus of Purim, and that's why Purim is such a unique holiday, insofar as it commemorates a Nes Nistar Aster Aster Esponai in Golus. And that's what we have to do Ad Lo Yada. We have to appreciate, get to that level of appreciation that everything is part of a divine scheme. Hashem is always there. He's our reliable, trustworthy partner and friend. And Shir HaShirim, of course, expresses this in so many ways. The love relationship between Knesset Yisrael and the Dod, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is always there for us. The trouble is we don't see it always, but we need His Yeshua. And Purim is a fabulous opportunity through the drinking to get to that level in which all these, you know, all this static, you know, and separations and barriers between people and between us and Hashem will be broken down, and we'll get to some higher level of das, which is not the das that we have today, but the das that we can achieve on Purim, as long as we focus our energies and our thoughts on appreciating Hashem and His miracles. And then, in Mirtz Hashem, we'll have a very wonderful and successful Purim.
You know, there's no concept of pain. There's no, there should be. Purim is going to show that, you know, we're going to be at the stage that we will not have the concept of tsar, that there's evil, there's bad, there's...
But Joe, do you agree with me if I make the following statement? Just say, true or false? Most people cannot, on a daily basis, thank Hashem for bad tidings, for evil happenings, with the same gishmak, the same feeling, as they would have for good tidings. Is that true or false?
True. Absolutely.
So what I'm saying to you, Joe, I'm suggesting that you may be in opposition, you're on the negative side, and there are many who agree with you, you're opposed to intoxication, you don't see the point. But I'm suggesting that perhaps for most people to reach that level, that we can thank Hashem for everything, for Haman and Mordechai, for the good and the evil, you need some level of bittul hadas, meaning we are so intellectual, and we're so sharp and keen about what's good and what's bad. We ate from the Eitz Hadas, so we know the difference between Tov and Ra. We become such experts on what's good and what's bad, you know. And I've heard so many interpretations about, you know, the Democrats say it's bad and the Republicans say it's good. And the exact opposite happened when Obama was elected. And, you know, every Chacham thinks he knows the final answer. But what the final answer is, and this requires, I think, a das that we don't have, or most of us don't have, and Baruch Hashem, you have it, because you're a great Baal Bitachon, but most of us don't have it. And it takes a little bit of an intoxication. Again, I'm not saying to go too far, to reach that level of das that comes before das, a higher level of das.
I agree with you 100%. I'm saying, definitely for those of us in the day-to-day world, but I'm saying in the yeshivas themselves, they should be preaching this concept. They should not have to get totally drunk and throw up and make a mess of themselves and make a chilul Hashem. That's what I'm saying. Those guys
either that, or at least have a Rebbe who knows where to put the garbage bill. Hi, Rabbosai. Okay, just to expand this concept about Adlo Yoda, the Tiv Hamodim says that on every Yontif we give something to HaKadosh Baruch Hu Kaviyochel. The Pasuk says in Shmos Chav Gimel, Lo Yiroh Ponai Reikom. On Sukkot we give up our bias. On Pesach we give up bread. On Shavuos we give up sleep. On Yom Kippur, well, we give up all the physical pleasures. Every Yontif, every Shabbos, some has a bit of a luck, we give up something. What do we give up on Purim? We give up Adas. The mitzvah of Mishteh, of drinking Yayin, Adlo Yodas, means Bittul Seichel. We give up Adas. That's the greatest Nesina that we can give. Ki Adas hi Ikar Adam. We're giving up our essence as a person, as a human being, our intellect. Vadavar Yakar Bioter says the most cherished thing, most valuable thing to a person is his Das, and that's what we're giving up. When he's mevatel his das and his seichel, he says everything belongs to Hashem. Even my seichel belongs to Hashem. He basically remains, after he gives up his das, naked, choser kol. He has nothing. And if he's an absolute zero, that's the ultimate bittul. You know, to give up bread or even to give up your house on Sukkot, that's, you know, you're still something pretty significant. And even if you're not eating on Yom Kippur and enjoying other pleasures, even if you're not sleeping on Shavuos, you're still a person. But on Purim, you're basically saying to Hashem, I'm nothing. Everything is you. And that's what makes Purim perhaps the greatest holiday of them all, the whole year. Because when we give up Adas, we reach this unbelievable level. We have a dveikus in the mahus of Hashem, so to speak. Because he, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and his Das are one. And once a person is mevatel his own independent Das, he becomes included, incorporated in the Das, kolelis of the Kael Deos of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He becomes one through a dveikus with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So this concept of Adalo Yoda is a very, very deep concept. It doesn't mean that we have to lose it. It doesn't mean that we have to undermine our abilities to daven and to recite Kriya Shema after Purim. That's not at all what it means. It's the Ad Dilo Yoda. But to give up Adas for the sake of an all-embracing love of Hashem, to identify all of Das and everything in the universe is God, I'm a nothing, that's an unbelievable madriga. And certainly to appreciate that when we thank Hashem for Nes, our praise to Hashem incorporates all the Nisim, and that even that which looks negative to us, the Havan aspect, is also part of the Nes, that's something that that defies human comprehension. And to mention a sefer called Lahavin Ulahaskil from Rice, and he writes that Purim, according to the mystical writings, is a tikkun for the Chet HaKadmoni. And he quotes the Chidushi Arim of the Ger Rebbe, who says that our obligation of Ad Dilo Yoda to get drunk is his alus b'avodas Hashem. It really projects us higher in our service of Hashem, beyond the Eitz Hadas Tov V'ra. As a result of the Chet Eitz Hadas, we have the Havlatas Seichel Adav Adat. A man becomes totally, totally intellectual. His Das reigns supreme. And what we need is his Batlus. And our Das, our Seichel, to some extent, stands in conflict with his Batlus. And when the Pasuk says, Vatera Ha'isha Ki Tov Ha'etz L'machol, what it means is, according to Rashi, Rasa Dvarav Shal HaNachash, she saw the wisdom, so to speak, of the Nachash, Lamar. And what did she realize? She was convinced, logically, that it made sense to eat from the Eitz Hadas. So the beginning of man's being hurled into the wind, the stream of sin, is really the Das. And this is going to bring Misa Li'olam. And what we're trying to do is some sort of tikkun for that, you know, misuse of Das, you know, when logic, you know, takes over our entire being. The Jewish people at the time of Nebuchadnezzar were, in a sense, controlled by their Das, by their Seichel. They would bow down to the Tzelem because that made sense in that particular position that they were in. When Achashverosh invited them to take part in the Mishteh, then most of the Jews decided that we're under the control and the authority of Achashverosh. This is what we have to do. Achashverosh is the Melech over 127 Medinas. We got to join in this party. And that made sense. That was the logical conclusion of employing Seichel. Chazal say, Shekeinenu misudaso shaloso rosha. Chazal say, in Shabbos Peites, May Har Sinai Har Sheyarda Sinoli Umos HaOlam Olav. Yesh Hanhaga Shel Golus Asur Liudim Lispalet Ularim Rosh Yosem Idai. Right? We have to be very careful and inhibited not to stand out as Jews in the secular world that we live in. It's called, in the language of Rabbi Chiya and the Medrash Rabbah in Dvarim, Hatzpinu Atzmachem. You know, play what we call low profile. Don't stand out. But all that is okay, atzminu atzmachem, when it can be reconciled with halacha, but when it's counter halacha, antithetical to halacha, to violate halacha because we want to be like the goyim, oh no. That's not acceptable. And that's going to be the shoresh, the root of the toast of the Jews at the time of Nebuchadnezzar, of the Jews of Shushan at the time of Achashverosh. And the time in which, the period in which the Jews finally comprehended their error was Purim. At that moment, Hevinu Mazal Mazah. And therefore, they're required to have a Mishnah and Simcha Chayvinus L'Bsume V'Priyat D'Lo Yoda. This is a unique halacha, which says that Klal Yisrael have to reach on Purim the Maskana that they are Lo Yoda. And what Lo Yoda means is that it's not that we should not be controlled by logic, by intellect, by seichel, by higayon. There's something called lo yada. There's a kiyum of klal yisrael that's not under the anhaga of seichel and yedia, but at a kiyum of anhagas haTorah, which really is the essence of libsume bepuraya, which means to weaken the das, because sometimes that sharp das leads us down the wrong path. And also, the idea of drinking on Purim means that we are totally dependent upon Hashem. We are not self-independent. In a sense, you know, Klal Yisrael during the time of the decree of Haman were absolutely lost. There was nothing they could do to save themselves. It was only intervention of Hashem. And if a person wants to really experience this concept and acknowledge it, he's totally dependent upon others, let him get drunk, because he'll see that he can't do anything for himself. So these are some of the ideas, I think, that are involved in Mishte, in Ad D'Lo Yoda. We have to leave everything in the hands of Hashem, appreciate the Midah of Bitochon, the Emunah, the praise of Hashem for all the Nisim that encompass every aspect of our lives. That's the Argodol, the very powerful light of Purim. And in Mitzvah Hashem, we should be zochet to that light this coming Purim. Abaleinu L'Tova, Ken Yiratzon.